This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, the Frankenstein Complex. Why is fanfiction a dirty word? So, I think this week we could start off with Madeleine perhaps explaining what the Frankenstein Complex is, and hopefully it won't involve grave robbing of any kind.
Well, maybe a little bit of grave robbing, Jules. Right. You know, only a decent amount of grave robbing. Okay. So the Frankenstein Complex is a term that I conned during my undergraduate. And I actually started off with nothing to do with fan fiction. It started off when I was learning about Roland Barthes, I can't remember how he pronounced his name, but the death of the author. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Jules.
It rings a vague bell.
Yeah, the death of the author. And, you know, it's basically, to put it simply, and probably incorrectly, it's about when you're analysing a piece of work, the moment an author finishes writing something, they hand it over to the reader. The author then has nothing to do with that piece of work. Everything that is interpreted from it has nothing to do with the author. It's entirely the reader's interpretation, etc., etc., etc. And I was really angry at that because, as far as I was concerned, as a writer and as a reader, I felt that when you're reading something, you are reading a small part of the author's soul. Because they didn't pull that out of the air, you know, that was born of them. And yeah. As such, the concept that you are then able to cut out the author from that, it doesn't make sense. Because as far as I'm concerned, the writing is a part of the author. You're not removing the author because you're holding a part of the author.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was talking I started to think about the Frankenstein Complex. And then as I was... as it developed and I started really thinking about what I was trying to say, I realized that the Frankenstein Complex was better suited to my understanding of fan fiction. And it was about people's obsession with resurrecting older works and about how we claim ownership of other things and how we love picking to pieces old things and recreating them in our own image in order to create something new. An example of this, for instance, Sherlock. The TV series Sherlock is a fantastic example of the Frankenstein Complex, whereby we have this much, much beloved series of books by Arthur Conan Doyle that is very, very famous. And we took parts of it. You know, it's dead in the terms that the author is dead. It's an older series. It kind of had its peak and then it went down, and obviously it continues to have its peaks, but etc., etc., etc. We took elements, the bits that we wanted from it, hacked them off, and kind of applied them to new things. And we took lots of sort of little archetypes and lots of generic things, and we put them together to create a whole new monster. And that's basically what the Frankenstein Complex is. It's about people taking ownership of other people's work and recreating it in their own image for their own means.
And I think there's probably quite a lot of examples of that throughout history, in fact. Because I mean, obviously there's only a certain number of plots, or there's only one plot, if you like. Somebody wants something and either gets it or doesn't. You know, if you really want to boil it down to its constituents. Yeah. That's not to say that stories aren't unoriginal, because no one will ever tell a story quite how you do.
I think it's very important to, you know, draw the line here, that when we're talking about fan fiction, we're talking about taking more than a small, we're talking about taking a major element, a recognisable element from somebody else's story. So I mean taking a character, you know, Sherlock is an excellent example, because it's all of those characters. They're put in a different circumstance, they're put into a different world. The plot is sometimes very, very different, but it's still fan fiction because a major element has been taken from the original.
Yeah, I mean, they've taken the characters.
Yeah, they've literally taken the characters. So that is classified within the Frankenstein complex. And of course, we can go either side because there are some bits which are a little bit of a gray area. You know, there's no absolute dividing lines. But for the most part, we tend to be able to classify whether it's fan fiction or it isn't. Or if we want to be really posh, we don't have to call it we don't have to call it fan fiction. We can call it textual intervention. And textual intervention is the posh word that people, that professionals use when they don't want to say fan fiction. A textual intervention is, for instance, the Harry Potter movies are actually textual interventions of the Harry Potter books, because they're not, even though they're based on the books, they're not actually quite the same as the books.
No.
They're much shorter. So, textual intervention.
Well, okay, moving on from that, it's probably a good thing to look at the entire fan fiction culture. Fan fiction's been going a really, really long time, but the community fan fiction, I think the earliest example I can really think of definitely is the sort of slash fiction that was written about Star Trek. And this is sort of pre, people bonding in chat rooms on the internet, really. Although that, people still write Star Trek fan fiction, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But now it's a really big thing that you can find a fandom on pretty much anything you like, and if you can't find one, you can start one. And there are some great sites, like there's archive of our own fanfiction.net and various things like that. And I have to say, initially, I was very much in the I'm not a fan of fan fiction camp, because until I had a book published and really, I suppose, really thought about the engagement between the reader and the book. And let's be honest, it's a compact, isn't it? That you can have an author and a book, but it's not a complete cycle until you've got a reader as well. It's that part, that you need a reader to complete the circle, if you like. And it was just horrifying, the thought that someone might take some of my characters and make them act in a way that I didn't want them to. But the thing is, when you publish something, it's no longer private property that belongs in your head. It sort of belongs to whoever reads it to a certain extent. And they'll see things slightly different to you. They'll pick up on things slightly differently. And sometimes, they'll pick up on things that you think afterwards, damn, I wish I thought of that. So I have done a complete 180 on it, and I think it's a great way to see how readers really engage with your writing. And it's a great way for authors and readers to connect although, not overtly.
As you say, the moment you produce something, as much as I wanted to ignore Bath Death of the Author, there is definitely an element of it, which is that when you put something into the public domain, even though it is a part of you, it is no longer solely your property. And it's the basic way of seeing it is when you have a child, right? The child is not your property. They will always be your child, but they are not your property. And they will go on and influence people in ways that maybe you didn't intend them to. It's the same with a piece of work. We talk about how old fan fiction was, and yeah, absolutely. I think one of the moments we can really start pinpointing it in the modern day, it probably did start with Star Trek. That does not surprise me in the least. We know for a fact that fan fiction has been going on for an extraordinarily long period of time. Or, I mean, there's fan fiction written of of the Greek gods and stuff like that from way back when. People pairing them up together, and it happened all of the time. And fan fiction written of legends and myths, which then became onto themselves part of the legends and mythology. So fan fiction has always been a very integral part of our storytelling society. And to say that it's a new thing, to say that it's a vulgar thing that has just occurred now, is incorrect. I think the reason we're more conscious of fan fiction now than we were before is because of how much the internet connects us as people. And it means that now there are literal sites dedicated solely to fan fiction, and other people can find fan fiction. It's an incredible community. Now, there's good sides and bad sides to that. We'll go on to that in a minute. But the point is that where there is a community, there is also the capacity for growth within that community, because you feel supported and you're not just writing it for you. You get bored less easily, and so you continue doing it. So the fan fiction community grows and grows and grows and grows, and the number of fan fiction grows. Now, my argument is that the reason people don't like fan fiction actually probably has a lot more to do with who is writing fan fiction than fan fiction itself, because fan fiction itself, as we've established, is as old as storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, we've always been doing it. So fan fiction itself is not actually the problem for the most part. And I think actually where the real problem is that our literature, until this time, until very recently, has been governed by a very strict set of rules. Now, we had oral storytelling, but the publishing world was governed by, as we say in university, white middle class dead men. It was governed by them, and that you a few white middle class women will sort of sneak in there, and a few people of color, if they're really, really lucky, will get in there as well. But for the most part, anyone who was not seen as appropriate was pushed down, and all their literature was written by anonymous. You know, so if you ever go into a library and you see something written by anonymous, chances are it was written by a woman or a person of color. Very high percentage that that's probably what happened, and that they couldn't have it published otherwise because no one would want to read something by someone like that.
It was content specific as well. I mean, there's a reason the Brontes published as the Bell Brothers, because what they were writing was considered coarse and would have been considered okay if it came from a man, but was perfectly indecent coming from a woman.
Exactly. So, and this is where it completely goes into it, because this idea that it's okay if it's written by a man, but it's indecent if it's written by a woman definitely plays into why people don't like fan fiction. Fan fiction is, for a majority of fan fiction, is written by horny teenagers. Okay? Horny, angsty teenagers. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that.
I have got, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have got a fair bit of evidence that suggests that some of it is, a fair proportion of it is written by frustrated mid-30-year-old women as well.
You're right, okay. It tends to be written by sexually frustrated people. Let's just put it at that. Now, that's not to say that everyone who writes fanfic, no, obviously not. But the fanfiction that everyone comes to mind when we talk about fanfiction, everyone goes, "Ugh, tentacle porn." That, you know, that's the thing. It's like, what do you think of fanfiction? Ugh, isn't that the tentacle porn stuff? Okay. Funny that your mind went straight there, but all right. But yeah, obviously the very not safe for work fan fiction is obviously the first that comes to mind. It's the one that leads, it's the loudest, it's the biggest, so it's what we see first. And someone I was talking to someone about fan fiction, and they were like, yeah, you've got this stuff and it's just totally disgusting, and it's not acceptable. And I'm like, have you never read Lolita?
Well, yeah.
And they were like, no, but you know, that's a classic. And I'm like, why is it a classic? Look at the story. It's a disgusting story. It's an awful story, and it's not like it's actually trying to teach you anything,
No, I mean,
because
even
it's not
Nabokov
written in that
was,
style.
yeah, Nabokov was extremely ambivalent about it. He wrote it and threw it on the fire at least twice, so.
Exactly. You know, it's not the way that whole thing is written, and yet it's considered a classic. And I think if a woman had come out with that, it would have never been picked up. I honestly do believe that.
Yeah.
But it shows the certain standard, which is that if you are an educated white male, your work will be considered classic. If you are a young teenager, then it's vulgar,
I
and I
think,
don't agree with that.
I mean, I think, sorry about the sidebar there. I don't agree with it either, but I think there is a small distinction to be made. It's not a case of your work will be picked up because you happen to be a white male of a certain state stature. It's just you're more likely to have the opportunity to submit it to the right people at the right time when the moon's in the right segment of the astrological chart, etc. And you won't have to
But I know I
sacrifice a goat or one of your children.
but I also think that there is an element that, you know, a cover letter will be looked at more if you've got a white sounding name and you're male. I do think that there is an element of that
There is
in
still
that.
quite a lot of sexism in publishing, definitely.
And no, I think there's racism as well, but you know,
Yeah.
it's harder to prove, but I think that these are two things that still govern, and hope and I think that it's getting less now, and hopefully it will continue to get less, but I think it's still actually a major issue. Of course, the other thing is that people don't like fan fiction because there's no quality control. And I'm like, well, there is quality control. It's very simple. Don't read the stuff that you don't want to read. That's the
Yeah.
quality control.
I mean, a
It
lot of
doesn't
it
cost
is,
you anything.
yeah, a lot of it is self-censoring in the in the sense of people will tend to read things a lot more, assuming they're playing fair, if, you know, it interests them, if they really like that particular writer's style. You know, the ones that are really bad generally will get read less. Of course, the whole thing about fan fiction is it's about finding your tribe. It's about finding that group of people who are into the exact niche that you're into as well. And this isn't a sexual thing at all, particularly. This is just a case of, no, I really like these characters and I'd like to see them being manipulated in these ways because this is an interesting story that I think should be explored. And that's a good thing. But there were, in fact, we'll go into it a little bit later, but there were some very big divides because wherever you have community, you also have the opportunity for massive, massive disagreement.
And it does get fan communities have always been rabid, you know, if they are people. I mean, with Sherlock Holmes, when Arthur Conan Doyle killed Sherlock Holmes, there were riots. People, fan communities, when they get together, are very impassioned, and because of that, sometimes very ugly sides do come out, which I feel are not a reflection of the community, but they are a reflection of community. Not behavior is the wrong word, but mentality, I guess, in that when the moment you start having a number of people, there's a certain power that comes with that. And with that comes a sense of entitlement, which isn't necessarily correct. But yeah,
It does
that's a
create,
whole other issue.
it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle, doesn't it? Because when you've got people, you've got more voices saying the same thing, you've got momentum, which ultimately is what we as writers do actually really want. We want word of mouth because it sells books. It reaches more people. It helps us identify our tribe. Our tribe are the people who like reading our books and would like to buy them and would like to hear all the interesting little facets and things that probably bore other people. So in that sense, it's really good, but it can be used negatively or positively. It's a thing to
And I
remember.
think, oh, where was I going with this? I've just been totally distracted. With the creating of community and with, you know, fan fictions and stuff like that. No, it's gone. It's just gone.
It
I'm
might come back
sorry.
in a moment. Don't worry.
It'll come back in a moment.
That's
I'm sorry.
probably my fault. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll come up with an example of some really negative type stuff around fan fiction because I came in on the nay side originally, even though I'm not now. You come in with a really, really positive one, and we'll just play with it from
Okay,
there.
you go first.
Okay, well, there's a couple of examples. One of the which is, I'll just skim over this one because I think, you know, we don't need to go into it, and it's not really speculative other than it's just so stupid. But the way E.L. James basically took the entire plot of Twilight, changed the names, and then published it and made a lot of money out of it. And I find it utterly disgusting that she did it that way. Not so much that she found her tribe and found people who wanted to read what she was writing, but the fact that she literally ripped off plots and just changed the character names, because when she originally wrote them as fan fiction, they still had the same character names. And the fact that what she then published was almost, you know, she almost didn't change anything except the names. To me, that's plagiarism, in my opinion.
And thank you, because you've also just reminded me what I was going to say.
There you go.
The whole plagiarism thing is some people who come in negatively about fan fiction will argue, look, this is plagiarism. It's not original. You know, you could get arrested for this. But for the most part, actually, a majority of publishers and stuff like that don't want to take down fan fiction. They don't want to take down fan fiction. They don't want to take down fan works and stuff like that, even though they could. And the reason they don't want to do it is that it's advertising. It really is fantastic, absolutely free advertising for them. So for the most part, they don't. And that's because usually people don't make money from it. And sometimes they'll sell prints and stuff like that. But again, it's a form of advertising which they don't have to pay for, which ultimately sells them more books. Now, with the case of 50 Shades, she did start to make money out of it, and she wrote it out from fan fiction. Is that it started as a Twilight fan fiction, and people were very, very much into it. But at the same time, it was an AU, an AU fan fiction, as far as I'm concerned, which means that it was set in an alternative universe. And I haven't read 50 Shades of Grey, so I can't comment on how similar the plot is. But the fact that obviously it is not speculative fiction, for me, says that it is different enough for her to get away with it, in that the fan fiction itself, even though it did absolutely start as a fan fiction with all of the same names, was still vastly different from the original because it was an AU. And from the sound of it, the characters are also different, probably because she was bad at writing fan fiction than anything else.
I think I was just going to say, first of all, you're not really missing anything by not reading 50 Shades of Grey. Also, yeah, okay, it's an alternate universe version of it, so I can see your point there. But very little else really was changed, except all the, you know, filthy sex scenes were thrown in, which are utterly boring. And the characters are how she actually reads the characters, I think. And
yeah,
that would suggest she doesn't have a very good, strong grasp of characterization. What I find particularly creepy is that Christian is the name of Stephanie Meyer's husband. Which is kind of creepy, in my opinion. I don't know if that was deliberate or it was just accidental or whatever. But no, I do find that quite close to plagiarism. And I think if that was me and that happened to me, I'd be quite annoyed about it. Then on the other hand, how many people read 50 Shades of Grey and thought, oh, was this based on Twilight? I never read Twilight. And so she got the few people who were netted to read it.
But I think there was another element, which is that 50 Shades of Grey was aimed towards a different audience than Twilight was.
Yeah, in fairness, it catered for a different niche.
It was a different niche, and I think if it had been aimed toward the same niche, that's when things would, I think, would have started, because she could have potentially been... Well, the thing is, you can't really steal customers, because if you've read the book, then you've read the book. It's not like you can only ever read one book.
No,
so, I guess it depends. As far as I'm concerned, I don't like her very much. I have particular things to say about her. I'm not a big fan of her as a person or her as a writer. But I think she did the bare minimum she had to make it not plagiarism. And she you know, it isn't plagiarism. It's barely not plagiarism, but it isn't plagiarism.
I suppose that's the thing, really. And I'm owning up right now. Obviously, you can't see my hand up, but this is me, mea culpa. This is not an unbiased opinion on my part. This is like a very, very biased opinion, because I will put up with a lot and I will read almost anything. I mean, in fairness, 50 Shades of Grey was actually an assignment, so I had to do it. But that might be partly why I'm annoyed. But it was the laziness. I can forgive almost anything except sheer lazy writing. Yeah. And that's what it is. And that's what's really offended me. So take my words with a pinch of salt on 50 Shades of Grey. It wasn't the major example I wanted to say anyway. I wanted to discuss the Mortal Instruments series by Cassandra Clare, which is a bit of a contentious topic. Now, I don't actually have an opinion on this. I have read a few of the Mortal Instruments books. They're okay, in my opinion. But the problem a lot of people seem to have, as I understand it from what I've read, is that when Cassandra Clare was writing a lot of fan fiction, she quoted and used good lines from all sorts of things, from Red Dwarf and Blackadder to various fantasy novels that were out of print, and she didn't cite them as actually being the source material. And then when she went and wrote The Mortal Instruments, she based a lot of her stuff on her fan fiction and didn't really change some of the lines. And that's where people get really quite annoyed, as I understand it.
Yeah. Now, the thing about that is it's a two-way side, because on the one side, I think, yeah, she was stealing a lot of good lines and jokes and things from other stuff, and she didn't cite them. Now, obviously, when you're writing fan fiction, it tends to be within a section, and it tends to start with a disclaimer saying, I do not own any of these characters, I'm not using them for monetary purposes, it's just for the story, etc., etc., etc. So they all have disclaimers at the beginning. So on the one side, I'm thinking, yeah, that was very cheap of her to take all these lines and not say, this is from this, this is from that. But then on the other side of me is saying, she didn't really have a responsibility to do that. Because she was not, people were not paying to read this fan fiction. People were reading this fan fiction with the knowledge that it was fan fiction and therefore was taking elements from other, you know, things. And I've read plenty of fan fiction and seen plenty of fan fiction where punchlines from Monty Python, etc., 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 have come in, references have come into it. Hell, I've probably slipped in a few generic jokes myself. These things come to mind and we can't help it. Now, I think where she faltered was that she did it quite a lot, and she wasn't particularly honest about it. And then, of course, she wrote her original stuff and it was very informed by the jokes that she'd made. And that was when there starts to be a problem. But at the same time, legal action has not been taken against her because there's no grounding for it. She hasn't actually plagiarized anything. And if she has, she's gotten away with it.
No, well, nobody actually wanted to present a legal case against her. Actually, somebody did. And I can't remember mm-hmm. which author it was, but it's about the shadow hunting.
Yeah, it's about the shadow sigils, hunters thing.
Etc. And I think that's still in contention, actually. But when people pointed out that, you know, you've stolen this and you probably should cite it, her friend, who was a lawyer, would come in with, you know, a proper Heidi attack, which is where that comes from, and threaten legal action to somebody just for pointing it out. And there was a lot of cyberbullying going on with it, which is bad.
Yeah.
And then add to that the fact that there were several times when she said, I'm sorry, guys, I just can't write anymore at the moment because my house or flat was broken into. This was on two occasions, I think. And my laptop was stolen and my computer was stolen. And fans sent her money. So she received money so that she would continue writing fan fiction. And that, I'm only going on what was generally reported in the community. I don't know the veracity of this. But if it's true, then that's quite squicky.
Yeah. Yeah. On the one side, you know, you see very often within communities, if someone says, look, I'm having a hard time, my house was broken into, people will send money and friends will say, you know, within the community, because we're quite a supportive bunch.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with that. My problem comes with, was she telling the truth? I don't know. Don't know if it's ever been investigated. And I have also heard reports of cyberbullying to, you know, young kids, young underage teenagers who were just trying to follow the rules of fan fiction, which this woman was taking far too seriously.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's things start to get ugly. And, you know, I read her first book and I enjoyed it. And I, you know, and it wasn't very good. It was all right, and it was good for what it was. I didn't ever bother reading any of the other things because it felt like a patchwork of other stuff, even though, you know, it was her own original writing. It felt like a patchwork of all the other stuff that I'd read before. She had no original voice for herself. And we can talk about that, the negative quality, a part of fan fiction in that respect in a second. But ultimately I thought, she's okay, but she's not a fantastic writer. And I don't think, maybe she's developed since then, but I haven't read any of her other works, so I don't know.
As I understand, with The Infernal Devices, I did read a sample, haven't read the whole book. I keep intending to read these, the Infernal Devices, because they're sort of steampunk ones that are prequels to the Shadow Hunters, as I understand it. And actually, it seemed to have really matured and come along. Now, I don't know how original a lot of it is because I haven't really read enough of it. But I did think, oh, this looks up like it's quite good. And then I never got around to actually finishing it. I will at some point and I'll come back to it. Because I think the thing is, she genuinely has some quite good ideas. And she genuinely has some viewpoints that would be interesting to explore. It's just that when she started out, like many writers, perhaps she didn't have the confidence in her own voice and her own wit. And instead of just accidentally lifting lines, which we all do occasionally, and then someone points it out and you go, oh, crap, and smack your forehead with your hand and try and think of something else that was as funny as that perfect line. But there was a certain amount of deliberacy about it.
Yeah.
And if that came from
because some of them were direct quotes. I mean, some of it was literally, it wasn't just even jokes, it was bits of description and stuff like that was directly in there. And I think we can, you know, sometimes you read something and you're like, oh, that's a lovely way of describing that. I may have to try and use that kind of analogy again in my own writing. And obviously, people always do that because you get generic phrases now, you know, like his heart in his throat and stuff like that, we see all the time now. And someone originally did come up with that, and then everyone else stole it, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's when you've got two sentences which are exactly the same from another piece of work, and you start to think, hold on a second, this isn't just admiring a turn of phrase. This is just taking the turn of phrase.
This is absolute paragraphs, and you've chosen books that are out of print at the moment, because remember, when she was writing this, this sort of predated ebooks to a big extent. So
mm-hmm.
It was a lot harder to track down these books unless someone had a photographic memory.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a little bit suspicious.
That's not quite. Anyway, we don't know. We don't know for sure, but it, as an example, and unfortunately that's a tin can that is going to continue clunking around her because that's how she behaved early in her author career, which is a bit of a warning to everyone who writes, which is be the best version of yourself possible, particularly in public.
Yeah.
Because it will stay with you. You can't outrun a reputation now. Not with the internet. Everything's written in ink, if not in stone. So
and it will come back to bite you. It will absolutely come back to bite you. Now, good part. Let's talk about some of the good parts of fanfiction. Yes. I'm going to talk about my own experience with fanfiction, which is that, as I've probably mentioned, I'm dyslexic. And when I was growing up, I really struggled to read for a start, which was a bummer because I was from a family of readers. So, you know, they'd all be like, okay, we're going to go read our books now. I'm like, that's great. I'll just stand outside then, shall I? it was usually sunny. We were living in the Middle East. It was fine. It's like, fine, I'll just go into the streets. So, you know, what I would do is that I would run around outside, and I'd play imaginary games in my head. And very often that involved, I was listening to the audiobooks of Harry Potter, which is how I eventually did get into reading. And so I would go and play with the Harry Potter gang. I'd throw myself into their world, and I'd play imaginary games with them for hours, and it would be great fun. And that was fan fiction. I didn't realize it at the time, but it was fan fiction. And then I was also coming up with my own original stuff while I was at it. So when I finally did get into reading and I started writing a little bit of these ideas down, because I spent so much time playing with these ideas in my head and turning these stories over and thinking of different things that I started practicing writing them down. And when I was introduced to fanfiction.net, I was amazed, because it was at that time I'd just gotten into reading, and you know, I'd be in that really annoyed state where you're between books and you're just desperately waiting for the next book or the next episode to come out, and you really, really want to see more of that content. And then they're like, look at all these fan stories, some of them are really good and you can read whatever you want. And it was a whole new world, and I loved it. And then I finally built up the courage and I wrote a fan fiction and I put it online. It was awful. It was a really bad fan fiction. My writing was terrible, and I got reviews. I got reviews from these people who had read it and had advice to give. And they were polite, and they were nice, and they were supportive. And because they were reading it, I thought, okay, I've got to step up my game. So I put more effort into the next chapter. And then I put more effort into the next chapter. And the reviews kept coming in, and the reviews kept getting better. And so I started to really, really put effort in. And then I had an unfortunate experience with fan fiction, which is that I teamed up with someone from another website, which I'm pretty sure is closed down now, and I've forgotten what it is. And I wanted to write they'd started writing a Final Fantasy fan fiction, which I really enjoyed. But they were said, I'm going to stop writing it now because I just don't have time. And I said, oh, can we do it together? We can write it together. I can pick it up where you've left off, because I thought it was such a good story and I really wanted to see where I really wanted it to continue. So she agreed. So I picked up this fan fiction and I started to post it as well. And, you know, it was getting good reviews, and that was fine. And then someone contacted me and they said, you've plagiarized my fan fiction. And I thought, don't be ridiculous. I got this fan fiction from somebody else. And what had happened was that this person had literally stolen the idea from someone else and was using it. And I picked it up and was carrying on. And so it was, I was, first of all, I didn't believe them. And then I went and read their fan fiction. I was there like, oh dear. Oh, very much dear. Some of these is lifted word for word. And I had no idea. So that got extremely ugly very quickly. This person was not very happy and they were not very patient with me. So I removed that fan fiction entirely. I was heartbroken because I was really enjoying it. And I decided to restart it with all my own original ideas instead. And I think that was a game changer for me because this person, yes, in their fan fiction had been stolen, so I really I empathized with them, but they were not very nice. And ultimately, they were a bit rude to me, and I was a 13-year-old girl, and this person was a middle-aged nurse, and they really laid it into me, and they were not kind. And I sort of stole myself and thought, I'm going to write something which is so good, because they insulted my writing. I thought, I'm going to show them up. And so I put so much effort into writing from that point on. And as far as I'm concerned, that was the moment that I started writing that. That was the moment that my writing actually began to shape itself into what it is today. And from then on, the fan fiction that I wrote was significantly better and kept getting better. And then my original writing kept getting better. And here I am now. So fan fiction, whereas when I was on a similar website posting original stuff, no one would read it. No one wanted to touch it because trying to attract people, I had no marketing skills or anything like that. Trying to attract people to your original content, trying to convince them to come read your original content is very, very difficult, and very different to saying, "Hey, I know you're a fan of Lucian from A Court of Mist and Fury. I've written a fan fiction about him." It's very easy to pick up readers in that way. Very different. And because of that, because of fan fiction, my writing improved. So that's my personal positive experience.
I think in a lot of ways it probably is a really good, I don't want to say the word school, but a broad term school for improving your writing and having an arena to really play with it in and enjoy it. It probably beats 20 years of writing secretly and covertly in the closet and not telling anyone that you write. So I'm totally on board with that.
Jules, there's something you want to tell us, Jules.
Yeah, there was a big whole coming out thing when I said, yeah, by the way, I'm a writer. And they're like, yeah, we know what you've been doing this whole time. It was hilarious.
You thought you were being subtle, but we knew we could hear you scratching on the paper.
Yeah, see, in another 20 years, I might be over it. I really genuinely hope that no one ever finds the trilogy I wrote when I was 12, 13, because I've lost track of it. I don't know where it is. And admittedly, my writing was terrible at 13, and my actual handwriting was terrible at 13. So, there's two things there to put people off reading it. But I think it's so terrible that it might actually be really, really funny. Yeah, I don't really want the world seeing that. That's the one bit of my writing I can genuinely say, no, you're good, you don't have to read that. This is not a
Please,
hidden,
please don't read
but it's not,
that.
this is not a hidden gem, I promise you. Like, I
Yeah, I
can,
think we've all.
yeah, it's it was all about this set of shapeshifters. This is before shapeshifting and vampires and things were really in. That's how long ago it was. And it was set in a sort of Victorian-esque rural steampunk type thing, but I didn't know that steampunk was a thing then either. So
So there you
yeah,
go. Yeah,
it's really bad, really, really bad. I can't stress how bad it
Oh dear.
But then
I'm not even gonna.
not everybody. In fact, has any writer ever, honestly, someone give me an example if you can think of one, literally picked up a pen or got out a keyboard and just written something fabulous straight off? Because I don't believe that's been done.
Oh yeah, I've totally done that. No, I'm lying. I'm sorry. It's a lie.
So if you
It's
read
an
Jane Austen,
absolute lie.
you read Jane Austen's first drafts and they're shit. They're really, really bad. And it's so comforting to know that someone like Jane Austen wrote really crap first drafts.
Now, speaking about the benefits of fan fiction and how they can really nurture your skill as a writer, someone did point out something else to me. Well, I say someone else. Trudy Canavan. I don't know if you've ever read any of her work. No, of course you have.
Most of it.
The Yeah, it's the Dark Magician. Black Magician trilogy? Black Magician? Yeah, the Black Magician trilogy. Big fan of hers. Well, I think it's fair to say she probably influenced the Hamartia cycle. Definitely did. Probably more than I actually realised initially, because I read it and then several years went past and I started writing it, and now I think about it, I'm like, oh dear. So, I hope no one goes, hold on a second, you've stolen that. I didn't steal it, she just influenced me quite a lot because she's an excellent writer. She does not like fan fiction. Last I checked on her website, she doesn't like fan fiction. She obviously didn't want to be sent fan fiction, which I can understand because she's a very popular writer, so there's a lot of it about. She made a point, which is that if you only write fan fiction, you do not nurture your original creativity. Now, I thought that that was a little bit of a pretentious thing to say, because no one is actually original, really. We're all influenced by things. We're all stuck on particular story arcs and archetypes, and that is influenced from the moment we start seeing fiction. But for the most part, people do come up with original stuff, especially writers, because they're creatives. So I felt that that was a bit of an unfair, but there was an element of truth to it, which is that, and this is where my comment about Cassandra Clare comes into it, that her writing was a patchwork because it just felt like she was taking, to begin with, lots of different things from other from things she liked and putting them together. And I didn't know where she came into it. I couldn't see what was hers shining through. It wasn't just that she was influenced, it was that she was just taking. And it was very clear in her writing, as far as I was concerned. Feel free to disagree with me. And yet, Trudy Canavan's comment failed to also register the fact that, yes, whilst it can, writing solely fan fiction can stunt your ability to be originally creative, it actually teaches writers a skill which I think is incredibly important and is often overlooked. And that's continuity. And I think that when you're writing fan fiction, good fan fiction is the fan fiction you pick up and you're like, oh my God, you've captured this character perfectly. You're inside of them. The way you've written their voice is just like the way I've always been reading it. You understand them. You know them perfectly, and it's consistent. When you're coming up with your own characters, you need to develop them to a depth whereby not only do they have a particular voice, but you write in that voice consistently. And that's actually quite difficult to do. And fan fiction actually can teach you the skills to be able to do that with more ease and more consistently and better, basically.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think there's something also to be said in that there are people who, first of all, you have to be really, really passionate to want to sit down and write about anything because writing's hard. I mean, if you want to annoy me, to just tell me that, oh yeah, I keep meaning to write a book someday when I've got the time, like it's a really easy thing to do because it's not, it's really difficult. There's fun moments, there's great moments, there's breakthrough moments, and totally hyper moments. But most of the time, it's just hard work. So you have to really, really be passionate about it, which is probably why you get people when they disagree in fan fiction communities, they really disagree because there's no way for, it's almost like religious fervour. They can't back down because they care that much about it, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, it's just when it's misdirected. But fan fiction, in a way, is safe in a way that your own writing isn't. And my theory is that you take characters that you already love and that you care about, and you put them in different situations, and quite often they're really horrible situations, depending on who's writing. But you can't fail in the same way because it doesn't have to be published. You can have an audience with it without the responsibility of, having to worry about people not liking it in the same way because they're not your characters. And I think it's also kind of like it's like escapism plus one, isn't it? It's not just integrating with a book or a TV series. I think there is a certain safety about it because there is something very, very scary about setting off and writing your own book. And it doesn't go away with different books. You might just get better at dealing with it, but it's not something that just disappears.
No, No, it isn't. Fan fiction is a warm, comfortable place, which is, there's parts of the fan fiction world which are dangerous, and don't get me wrong, there's terrible, terrible, terrible fan fiction. There's toxic fan fiction. There's toxic fans. But then there are toxic books as well out there. And ultimately, I don't understand people who insult fan fiction writers, because that person has sat down and has decided to dedicate several hours of their day to writing something quite often. Okay, maybe it's not the quality of a published book, but published books have professional editors. That's not all the author, and that author is being paid for their time. A fan fiction writer sits down, if they're lucky, they have a beta reader, okay, who's also doing it entirely for free, and they put it out at normally quite systematically, a chapter, and that's for free. And no, I don't have time for people who insult others who do that, especially because quite often those people are doing it for comforting reasons. They are trying to find themselves, they're trying to find their own voice. Or maybe they just really, really like a character and they want to get an idea down. You cannot deny the therapeutic aspects of writing, and writing fan fiction allows your writing and your voice to be heard in a way that writing original fiction as you're starting out is very difficult to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things, the biggest hurdles, and I wouldn't say I'd completely overcome it, that I've had to try and overcome as a writer is getting out of my own way long enough to get a story down. Because there's always a little voice in your head saying you should be writing it differently, you should be more literary. The big one for me was the fact that I'm not generally a literary writer. I'm a genre writer, and you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. I should be writing the stuff I enjoy reading. I should be writing the stuff I enjoy writing. And if it's not literary, if it's not sort of Man Booker Prize material, does it matter? Did I ever want that? And the answer's
No.
no. No. I just want to put out stuff that's entertaining and makes you think a little bit. So
Yeah,
that's what I mean
and to be
about
honest, actually,
getting out of your own way.
I mean, prize books don't actually tend to sell as well as genre fiction.
No.
It's true. They
No, they
don't. You're
don't.
like, well done, you got a prize, but you sold less than 1,000 copies, so that's
And
great.
I think that is the thing with a lot of literary fiction, and I'm not doing it down because I do like some literary fiction, but then some of it, I'll look at the Man Booker long list and the ones I've read. About 90% of the ones I've actually read, and obviously I don't have time to read the entire Man Booker long list because, I like to write myself. But I look at it and think, well, I liked about 10% of what I read of that list. That might not be a fair representation, a fair selection of what's on there, but
Yeah.
it's possible that I'm not really a literary reader, so it sort of follows that I'm probably not a literary writer, and it's okay. There's no point sounding like a pretentious ass in an attempt to be literary when actually you write genre fiction. One is not inferior to the other. That was the big deal, and I think it's the same to say with fan fiction. Fan fiction's not inferior just because it's fan fiction, because it's developed
No.
by fans. It doesn't matter that the subjects are not canon, or that they want to explore your ideas or your characters in a different way. They're not harming you in general.
No, and if they are, then that's slander and that's illegal. So that's not fan fiction.
You have recourse on that sort of thing. So, I mean, I can understand if you're a bit sort of wobbly about it, you might think, I don't want to read what someone else sees as my character. But no, I'd have to say that's one I sort of got over, really.
I'm glad, because I started writing fan fiction of your stuff.
No, it's fun. And it's great, and it's so much fun. It sort of takes the pressure off, really. I don't know if you've actually had a look at this, but on Amazon.com, the American Amazon site, there is Amazon Kindle Worlds, which is fan fiction that's sold, but this is authorized by the authors who've agreed into it. So, for example, Lisa Jane Smith, who wrote The Vampire Diaries and the Supernatural franchise. Supernatural are very, very canny about the whole fan fiction thing, actually. Very, very canny. It's really quite clever. But I mean, these stories are sold as Kindle ebooks or whatever, And Lisa Jane Smith actually got around her really rather rubbish book contract with the Vampire Diaries and the Secret Circle by writing her own fan fiction and releasing it on this site and selling it, with the understanding that other people could write fan fiction of her stuff. And I think the way they work is the author gets a small percentage of the royalties as well.
Brilliant.
So
that's so cool.
I think that's actually quite cool. I've spoken to other people about it and they think, no, it's fan fiction. We must stay pure. We mustn't make money out of it. But I do think that, you know, if this has all been entered into in agreement and it's being monitored properly, then it's probably not doing anyone any harm. So why not? It's just letting someone else write within your world, isn't it? And writers have been doing that since, like, early sci-fi.
Yeah, well, writers have been doing that since, you know, they could write, so... And storytellers have been doing it. Yeah, it's been going on forever. But no, I actually like fan fiction. I like people that, for me, as far as I'm concerned, there is no higher honor than someone saying, I loved your character so much that I wrote a little story about them. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm also a fan of my own work. That sounds conceited, but you kind of have to be if you're going to dedicate that many hours, you know, to it. You can't pick it up and go, I hate all of this, and then write it for hours and edit it for hours and hours. You know, I love my characters. I like what I do to them. and it's great for me because someone goes, hey, I wrote this fan fiction. I'm like, this is great because I get to read my characters without having to have put any of the effort into it. and Jules started writing a fan fiction, which was a cross between her world and mine, where Rufus Merle jumps through a portal, as you know they're prone to do, and he ends up meeting Emmeline. Yeah, and
on the North Yorkshire moors.
and he ends up naked, of course, which is an odd thing. But I've realised in all of the fanfiction, and in fact all of the books so far, Rufus has ended up naked. I think there's only one fanfiction where he's not had his clothes burnt off, which I think is rather telling. He just can't seem to stay dressed. He's the only character who can't seem to stay dressed. Everyone else keeps their clothes on, but Rufus, no. But yeah, so Jules started writing this fanfiction, which was very humorous, and I really like it. And if you want to find it, it's called In Other Worlds, and you can find it on fanfiction.net. And so I started writing a reply fanfiction where basically in hers, Rufus turns up, and Emmeline quickly realises that her little sister, Amy, has gone missing. And I said, right, Amy's gone to Hamartia. Rufus and Amy have swapped places. So Amy's wandering around outside Hamartia and gets picked up by Arl and Zachary, who's there like, what is this? There is a child out here. I must take care of this tiny munchkin. And so he takes her back with him. That was actually really fun.
It's just great. And I need to go back and finish it because I need to know what happens. And I'd love to see Amy's little story finish as well. So yeah, it'd just be really, really cool.
She's developed a crush on Zachary. There's nothing I like more than writing sort of crossovers where two characters from different worlds get crushes on each other. Because actually before The Sons of Thestium was published the first time, I wrote a Merlin Sons of Thestium crossover fanfiction. I kid you not. And Merlin and Rufus sleep together, because why not? And then then Rufus kind of hooks up with Gwen, because why not? So I really like messing around with that. And I think I love crossovers because I love the idea. It's a great thought experiment to take two things that you know relatively well, or that you've interpreted at least relatively well, and then try to understand how the dynamic would shift when you introduce new characters into that setting. And I highly recommend it as a writing experiment. If you are a writer, and you're particularly if you've hit a bit of a roadblock, and you know, you don't quite know what to do with your characters, the best way of learning and understanding who your character is to put them in an entirely different situation that they've never been in before, and to figure out how they would react in that situation, because that is what's going to inform you. So you take Rufus Merle and you put him in the modern day and see how he reacts. And that's not something that would ever happen in the canon, but it will teach you a lot. You know, it taught me from reading through Drills, it tells me a lot about how he reacts and how, you know, he works and also how other people interpret him. So good experiment. If you ever find yourself in need of sorting out your own original writing, try writing some fan fiction. It may surprise you.
Yeah, and it's also it's more restful as well.
So restful, so restful. So restful.
We're going to have to wrap this up. This has been a really good one. We might have to come back to this.
Yeah.
We've only just sort of scrapped this up.
I've just released a new one, actually. I did actually write a Lucian fan fiction after finishing. I finally finished A Court of Mist and Fury. Yeah, well done, yeah. Me. And so I started writing a Lucian fan fiction so I could justify his behaviour in the book.
I got the
so heartbroken.
It's really good, but I kind of got the impression that it was that you wanted more of Lucian in the book, and that you were sort of compensating, because he really doesn't appear in A Court of Mist and Fury that much, does he?
No, but I think he's going to appear more in the next one. He better,
yeah,
anyway.
Too.
My poor little fox child. He's so sad and guilty and helpless. He needs help, and no one gave it to him. So that's why I'm writing the fanfiction. Give him more attention. Anyway, it was a good episode. We will definitely have to come back to the subject.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll catch up with you guys next week.
Thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.